Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. How deeply grateful I am you chose to be with me on this August 26th day, 2018. We're going to look at shallow. What does it mean to be shallow? That's I've had some really interesting emails of late, and boy, next week's going to be a dilly whopper too. So I want to thank those of you who take the time not only to listen to my radio program, but also who offer your questions. They're very, very important to me, and they might be very important to people who are listening. Less than none, and nonetheless, I am grateful whether you know it or not, and I want to always acknowledge that and thank you, because it's a very important service you do. You give to people that which they could not find anywhere else, a question that might, well, help them free themselves in a way and start their journey to the attainment, which is what it's all about. I want to thank my sponsors for their kindness, their love, their generosity, for keeping this radio program on the air. I want to thank them for their quarterly and monthly donations. It is the only way in which I am allowed to continue. And for those of you listening, if you are enjoying these radio programs, please understand it is only through your tax-deductible gift that I am able to sustain and keep our radio program. Without your contribution, none of this would exist, not any of it, not my TV programs, radio programs, podcasts, videocasts, all the things I do, my commentaries, they're all there for you. And I hope that you will consider becoming a sponsor and helping us to sustain our program. I don't really want it to get bigger. I just want to be able to sustain it. I want this little corner of the world to be there for you. And should you need it, which you all do, whether you know it or not, it will be there for you to help you in any way I possibly can in this very grim world that we live in. It is just getting more and more shallow. Let's talk about the word shallow. I looked up the word for you so we'd know what we're talking about. Not exhibiting, requiring, or capable of serious thought. That's how it's defined in the dictionary. Not exhibiting, requiring, or capable of serious thought. Wow. I think that's pretty... What's a serious thought, though? I guess it's called these days critical thinking, but I don't really... I don't like that term, critical thinking. I think it's best to observe. There are a lot of people out there, I mean a lot of people, the majority of human beings, who could fall under this this very bad definition. And I say the word bad, I shouldn't, but I do. It's a very painful thing to see, because most of us in this world just don't have the mental acumen or the mental acuity to go any deeper than what we go, which... Well, let's get to the questions and maybe we'll get to the core of it, and then who knows. First question comes from Lisa. She does not tell me where she comes from. I'm shallow. I know it. What can I do to deepen myself, Greg? Lisa. Well, this was a very brave question, Lisa. And I don't know if I ever get a question like this from a woman, because most women are very content with the kind of mind they have. As long as it gives reason and cause for reason and logic, they will stay with it. So you say you're shallow and you know it. And what can you do to deepen yourself? The first step is to be able to have enough compassion within you, Lisa, to see the suffering of others. It all goes down to the whole thing of selfishness and pride. If I can see the suffering of others and relate that suffering to maybe my own experience, where I'm not looking at just my suffering, but me as the cause of suffering, then I have broadened myself within. I have deepened myself within. I've gone in another direction. And I'm not really sure if that makes sense to you or not. The first thing is to see how brave some people are under duress and how they function in loving kindness in many, many different ways. And also how brave they are. There are some very brave people out there who do a lot of really wonderful things to help others and to be with others and to share with others. These are people I know very well in my own community. I watch them as I work in hospice. The nurses are incredible, just incredible people. And the people I work with in hospice are incredible people, just nurturing, kind, loving, just amazing. So if you can put yourself in a position somehow in your life where you are, wherever you are, and you see the loving kindness of those around you that are trying to serve humankind or help others, this would be a very good start. You could look at it and see, well, where am I in that? How do I help others? How do I work to help others? Now, for most people, this shallow experience of themselves is based on self-preservation, and you have to understand that. Most of us are more concerned with our own preservation, our self-preservation, than we are in serving humankind. Would you give that which you have that you think you need more than I do to me? That kind of attitude. And if you can just place yourself there for a while, looking at other people, seeing what they do, seeing what you don't do, seeing where they are, seeing where you're not, and you can have a sense of appreciation for all of that. I say appreciation, not guilt, not shame, appreciation. Then your shallowness, your unwillingness to have anything that might require giving and forgiving, two of the most important aspects of a human being's life. If you can do that, then you're in a very, very beautiful place, and you have come to find the meaning of your own existence here on earth, and maybe your own purpose even. So that's a very important thing to understand, to become aware of. The fact that you know you're shallow, Lisa, is a huge, huge thing. It's a wonderful thing. It's more than an admission. It is the ability to recognize non-critically, non-judgmentally, how the human being has taken over within you through genetics and DNA. In genetics and in DNA, we are not generous people. We are not kind people. Through our genetics and our DNA, we are always bracing ourselves for the fact that at any moment, something might be taken away from us that we believe we need more than maybe someone else might need. So we have that situation going on as well. When you start to look at it from the point of view of all of that, and you start to realize, this whole thing that I'm living for and living by is nothing more than self-preservation. That is when you can decide what to do. Until then, you can't decide because your genetics and your DNA are going to take over, and they're going to accumulate energy within you, emotionally speaking, and then you're not going to be able to do anything or be able to have any sense of causation of something higher and more beautiful within you. You just won't have it because your emotions will say, oh, as a woman, I am vulnerable. As a woman, I'm not here to, you know, go out into the world and be generous. That's my mate's point of view, or that's his job or whatever. It's his job to take out the trash, not me. It's not my job. I have other duty. See, that kind of mentality, it's a generic kind of genetic thing going on, and we allow it to define us in all sorts of ways that aren't very healthy at all. And they don't serve humankind, they don't serve other people, they don't awaken us. And that's the thing that's most important. So you're going to have to put aside yourself, your need for self-preservation, and stop worrying about it. You're going to have to start to look and see the effect you have on this earth as a person. You're going to have to look at the bigger picture of your life and what you're all about and what this living is all about. You're going to have to accept disgrace willingly, as Lhotse said in the Tao Te Ching. And if you do, and if you're willing of all of that, eventually, you will become more kind. And, you know, I want to say this to you. I know I've said it a billion times. It is only in having mercy that we find the meaning of our life. It is only in having mercy. Mercy is the meaning of our life. And I hope you can understand that and that gels in you, because that's really what it's all about. Kindness, love, forgiveness, giving, forgiving, all these things bring mercy. Thank you, Lisa, for your question. I deeply appreciate it. Please forgive me. Namaste. The next question comes from Christy. She does not say where she lives. I have a petty mind, my husband says. I take everything personally, my husband says. Is my husband right, Christy? I don't know you, Christy. I don't know you. I'm sorry. And, you know, I could sit here and say, well, it sounds pretty typical of most of the women I know. Yeah, I could say that to you. Oh, well, I get mail on that. But, you know, it is true. Many, many women take things very personally. Most women that take things personally are also very shallow. And you probably do have a petty mind, because how else would you know if people were picking on you or being unkind to you if it weren't for a mind that was always looking for maybe a fight or something that is wrong with another person? You have to ask yourself a question, and I'll ask it for you. What do you believe you're here for? Are you here to survive this lifetime? Are you here to survive this world? Is that all it's about? To get what you want, to go and pay the price of not having what you want for a while, and then getting what you want and doing all the things you have to do in order to get what you want, blah, 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 blah. Is that really what it's all about for you? Is it? For a lot of people, it is. They just slog through their life and try to get through the things they don't want to do so they can get to the things they do want to do. And there's always that going on. So I don't know what your petty mind is all about, but if your husband says it, I don't know your husband. I don't know what your relationship is between the two of you. I don't know if this was meant to be a kind comment and saying, you know, you need to take a look at the way you're using your mind. I don't know. I am assuming, making an ass of myself here, but I'm more than willing to do so in order to help you. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Okay. And, then you can ignore everything I'm going to say and have said. A petty mind is usually based not only on the idea of self-preservation, but the exaggeration of self-preservation. And that can mean that I am looking for others to dislike me or to find fault with me as I find fault with myself and maybe them. And in doing this kind of arrangement, living in this kind of modality, I miss the totality of the meaning of any given situation I'm in, which is trying to show me how to become more generous, more kind, more loving, more compassionate. I have to be able to see all of that. But if I don't see it, if I don't recognize what it's really all about in me, if I'm not looking at my life and realizing oh my goodness, this lifetime is more than my self-preservation can show me. If I don't see it for what it is, then it will become a pettiness in me. I will look at other people and think, well, what do you mean by that? Or don't you like me? Or who do you think I am? Things like that. It is easy to take offense to anything in this lifetime, anything in this world. This is why Jesus said in his magnificent teachings, blessed is he who is not offended in me. So many people are offended, deeply offended, by the matter of insight and truth that a person might have. This is a very, very serious thing, and it's all done through hardness of heart. Most of us have hardness of heart. We've allowed our emotionality to overtake us and be the genetic guide throughout our entire life. It not only sets down the course of our life, it sets down the rules of our life. And before you know it, all of this stuff just keeps going and going and going. My emotions keep growing and growing and growing. And at the end, I become a very petty thinker. My pettiness comes in the fact that I want to have what I want and display the kind of mind that is extremely selfish and into self-preservation without being criticized for it, without being noticed. I want people to think, oh, that's normal. That's the way it should be. And that's the way people want to think of their life. That's the way it should be. Oh, Kristen, I don't know how to say this to you, but to overcome all of this, you're going to have to learn how to be unconscionably generous. There is only one antidote I know. You have to see the sufferings of other people and ask yourself, could I help them? Could I do something out of the box that has nothing to do with my pride, my pettiness, my fears, my anger? Could I do something so out of the box that I would not have to be so petty in my mind looking at what other people might be thinking about me? It isn't all about me. Maybe a sense of generosity, of loving generosity, would be the answer for you. I don't know you personally, so I can't sit here and give you specific things that would maybe alleviate some of the symptoms of your pettiness. But along with pettiness always comes pride, always comes self-righteousness. And when I'm in my self-righteousness, I'm defending my pettiness. And I'm defending my mind, which has become lured into my emotional nature, which comes from my genetics, which determine exactly what I'm going to emotionally feel. You have no choice in your genetics. You really don't. You and I live by a genetic heritage whereby our emotions are the symbol and the outworking of DNA and genetics that go way, 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 way back in our heritage, in our lineage. And that's just the way we are. That's the way the body is. Now, you can do one of two things. You can immerse yourself in that and stay in that for the rest of your life, defending it, or you can transcend it. You can choose to go above it and beyond it. And if you choose to go above it and beyond it, something then of the other shore will start to arise within you. Something then where you, by your own admission and practice, are not so interested in your egotistical side, the hubris of you, where you are trying to defend your hubris against someone else or something else. When we pit ourselves through conflict against ourselves, we lose to our genetics. When we pit ourselves against someone else, we lose to their genetics, or they succumb to our genetics. And that isn't good either. The object is to transcend the body, to transcend the genetics, to go to that secret place, as it is said, of the Most High within you. that is beyond emotionality. The problem is, when a person is highly emotional, they just can't imagine there's anything else in themselves but their emotions, and they usually succumb to them without much resistance. And there's nothing I can do about that with you. I have a practice that I offer to my students, and it is a diligent one, and you really have to want this thing called love, and you must really want to transcend. And if you don't transcend, if you really don't want it that much, then here we go. You're going to stay the same. If I were you, I would sit down with my husband and ask for his forgiveness. I would ask him if he would help me and show me what he's talking about, that I know not what I do. I wish I did, but I don't. This would take a great deal of humility. It would probably cause you a great deal of humiliation, but in the end, it could be nothing but a loving blessing in your life, something that could really help you. And if you love him and you love yourself, it could be really meaningful. Hope that helps, Christy. Please forgive me. Namaste. And the last question. This comes from a woman named Sherry. She does not tell me where she lives. I laugh because it reminds me of a Sherry I once knew. Love is emotion, Greg. Don't you know that, Sherry? I think I know it all too well. I do, both in myself and probably in others. You think about all the emotional crap you and I have done in our life. I mean, really. The stuff we tried to pull off, the stuff we didn't know we were pulling off, the stuff that we didn't know we were doing, our basic mistakes in life, and I use the word mistakes, and they really aren't. Nobody makes mistakes in life. They're just following the path of typically their emotionality. And that path leads to all sorts of karmic things that will go on in a person's life. It will also lead to circumstances and conditions and all of that. Depending on who you are, you could believe that love is emotion. And if you want to keep it there, you keep it there for as long as you can until you can't stand it anymore. And once you suddenly realize, oh, it is my emotionality about love that makes all this happen. It is the idea that I gather certain emotions together that are symbiotic and filled with pettiness and pride, self-preservation, and I call that love. What if love had nothing to do with my emotionality and yours? What if? What if love was not emotional? What if love was simply love? It was not explainable. It was inexplicable to my ego, my pride, my vanity. What if love had nothing to do with any of that? What would I do? Because that's the situation we're in. Love has nothing to do with anything I believe in. If you believe in love, you're emotional, and it is not love. Love is unbelievable because belief depends on emotionality, high emotionality. And that's the big issue. If you are willing to dump your emotionality, if you are willing to allow yourself to have an experience outside emotion, you would realize love is nothing to do with the whole idea of emotionality. Love is simply love itself, and it brings forth what it brings forth when we are ready and willing to live beyond our emotionality. So, Sherry, I disagree with you, but I do understand. I'm out of here. Oy vey, oy vey. Thank you for listening to me. Sherry, thank you for your beautiful question. Thank all of my questioners. I hope all of you have a beautiful day, and please forgive me, eh? Namaste.